Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and joining us for the Big Three this week is none other than the delightful Roxanne Lawler. Roxy, how are you going?
Oh, pretty good. Thanks, Matt.
It's great to have you.
Oh, thanks.
What are your plans for this weekend? Tell us what goes on in the life of
Roxanne Lawler. First time in my life, I have three children going to youth camp.
Oh, free plug.
Thank you, youth leaders.
Oh my gosh, you get a kid-free weekend.
I do. Well, I'm still going to be at church, so, you know, and probably serving in kids' ministry, which is...
So you'll...
Yeah, other people's kids.
You've taken time away from your kids to serve others.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a beautiful imagery in that.
Yeah, Jesus asks us to be servants, so I'm just going, nah, just joking.
But you can have a quiet, sad day.
Yeah.
So that'll be delightful.
Yeah,
and then they'll come home completely exhausted and they'll go straight to sleep.
And I'll do a lot of washing. It's going to be great.
Oh yeah, I guess. Because is sleep... Like chasing sleep for your children, is that still a thing at their age? It's I'm constantly chasing sleep for my children.
Yeah, but. I think it's just getting them to bed at a decent hour, I think, now that they're right sort of almost in that, teenage years.
I do what I want.
Yeah, they don't want to go to bed at 7:30 anymore. They want to be up at 10:30 at night. And I'm like, will you just go somewhere else? Is there an off switch?
I don't want you here in this space.
Yeah,
this
is adult time now.
Oh, okay. So, and you'll get that on Saturday. It'll be this beautiful
24
moment.
Hours.
Yeah. Thank you to the youth leaders looking after Roxanne's children this weekend. Well, in a moment, we're going to be joined by Mark Rader, who preached during both our online and on-site services this past Sunday. And Roxy and I will be putting the big three questions to him as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. Now, for those of you who missed it, Mark continued in our series, Seven Letters, Seven Lessons, drawing discipleship teachings out of the book of Revelations. And you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermon podcast. But for now, Rox, I'm really interested on your thoughts coming out of Mark's message. What kind of stood out for you?
Mm-mm. Loving this series completely. I think that challenge as to where my loyalties lie, that whole sort of, going down the fitting into your culture and then following Jesus instead.
Yeah.
That's been really hitting home. In fact, on the way here today, I saw a ute that kind of encapsulated the message that we've been hearing. A little sneaky Jesus moment. I'm a very visual thinker. I think in pictures more than anything. And so I saw this cool ute and it had this giant crucifix on its back window. And I'm like, I'm not sure I'd really put a giant, picture of Jesus on the cross suffering on the back window. Window of my car, but okay, you do you.
Yeah.
Ute man. And I'm like, maybe he's a Christian, maybe he wants people to know Jesus died for his, their sins.
Yeah.
And then I looked and the ute had, and I'm sorry if this is somebody's business, but it had empire building and empire construction. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then I thought, hang on a minute, isn't that what we've been hearing about through Mark's messages and through Revelation is what is it that that we're doing here? And so for me that ute became a bit of a metaphor. Am I in my life, am I advertising Jesus and saying, Jesus died for your sins, but am I literally building and constructing the things of the empire, being the things of the world, empire in the world rather than kingdom and Jesus?
Yeah.
And so is that a kind of mixed metaphor that I'm sending out, am I telling people, no, you got to follow Jesus because he died for your sins and he's the way to God, but I'm actually building, empire, and that's really where my true loyalties lie. So it was a little picture
a little reinforcement.
Well, God was sort of speaking to me through that. So, yeah, it was
right
cool.
on.
Yeah, bit of a word.
Yeah, bit of a word for the
Thank
week.
Thank you,
I like
ute man.
Ute man.
In front of me.
Whoever you are,
yeah.
You are challenging us
that's
to consider
right.
who
yeah.
we serve.
Yeah, exactly.
Right on. I've got to admit, I really loved probably just because I'm a needy individual and the idea of even a side hug is really appealing to me. But that idea of the three-legged race and so that you good. Get to put your arm around Jesus and he puts your arm around you, that just warmed the cockles of my heart.
Absolutely.
This beautiful kind of, we're constantly talking about being in relationship with Jesus and what it is to walk in the ways of Jesus and walk with Jesus. But actually, I really resonated with that imagery because there is just such a partnership in that and a real you can lean on and be supported by, and he really is right there I loved that that imagery. It spoke my language, spoke my love language of just being a needy, requiring physical touch kind of
hold
individual.
Me, Jesus.
Hold me
till the end of the line, till we cross the finish line.
Get me to the end.
That was really good.
The more I say it, I'm just like, this encapsulates my personality.
Quick, someone get the ties, tie my leg to the leg of the Lord.
It's a beautiful thing. Well, I think it's time for us to start looking at the three big questions submitted through Slido this week. So, Rox, what are our big three?
Oh, we got some good ones, Matt. We got first one is, what are the economic implications for Christians today in following Jesus? We've got, what does it look like to genuinely share the yoke of Jesus? Not simply in word, but more importantly, indeed. This one's your three-legged race one, mate. And then we've got the third one is, what is Jesus actually promising to those who are victorious at the end of the letter?
Yeah, boom, because we actually didn't...
We didn't cover that bit.
No, we didn't cover that bit. He left us on a total cliffhanger.
No idea.
Well, here we are, ready to get the final word. Well, looking forward to that. I think there's only one thing missing, and that is the man himself, Reverend Mark Rader. Or what is it? Reverend Doctor.
The Reverend
Mark
Doctor.
Rader, I apologize.
You've finally gotten it right.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to belittle your PhD.
It's actually only a doctorate of ministry. So, okay. Belittle away.
It's more than I've got, mate. How you going? You've got... speaking of ghosting, you ghost us on a Wednesday now because Morling's picked up again.
Yeah, college is back. I'm there on Wednesdays. I'm normally, I think for the last 5 or 6 years, it's just been Tuesdays, but they needed me to teach something on a Wednesday. So they've kind of conveniently put both my subjects on that day. So.
I love it how you're just like, they want me to teach something. I don't know what I'm teaching, but I'll just show up and teach it. I'll just educate the future generation of leaders in our church.
Well, it's
just casually.
It's the jack of all trades, master of none. So I'm teaching Preaching 2 with Mike Frost. So we've shared that class for the last 3 or 4 years, which is a lot of fun. And then I'm doing church history. Mm-hmm. So the first lot of that.
I love me a little church history.
Yeah.
And I'm actually doing Preaching 2, but you are not my lecturer.
No, lucky.
Who's lucky? Who's lucky in this situation? Are you the lucky one? Is that what you're trying to say here?
I don't know.
I'm going to read into that for the rest of the week, I think.
I'll give you a side hug later.
Okay. That's all I need. Someone hold me. But before we do that, let's get into the big three.
All right.
First question was, what are the economic implications for Christians today in following Jesus?
Yeah, I think, and I kind of alluded to this in the message when I talked briefly about discipleship and finances, because I think that it felt a little bit, it felt like a bit of a stretch to talk about financial stewardship for us when I think it's so different than it was for the Church of Thyatira. Like, I think very much it was a matter of putting food on the table rather than for us, like whatever economic implications there are, they tend not to be that, at least in the West. But I think the question of economic implications for faith, I think there are some. I think that, as I talked about in the message, I think generosity is one of those issues. What do we do with our excess? And I think our world teaches us in ways subtle and not so subtle that we need things all the time. And I think we can just get sucked along with that. And yet I think we're called to use our finances in a way that reflects the kingdom principles and kingdom values and all those sorts of things. You think about I'm not sure what the love language is, but the whole, like this, what is it? Like the 1950s dad, I show you that I love you because I go out and get a job and I work hard and I make sure there's food on the table.
Yeah.
You kind of think, well, so how can we use our finances to kind of further like the project of Jesus, that kind of show our love to him by wanting his projects to succeed? How can we kind of help that kind of financially? I think there are other questions, I think, in terms of a financial implication, like things like, there's a greater awareness about like supply chains and, when I buy a shirt that's on sale for $9.99, somebody somewhere is paying for that.
Yeah.
Right. It's probably not me because I just got a great deal, but like just being aware of like the implications of our purchasing habits, I think that becomes an economic implication for us. I think there's value in us paying more for things that we know are ethical.
Yeah.
You know, that seems to me to be a place where we can be deliberate and intentional about our finances. And I think it's any time that we can be more deliberate and thoughtful about our finances, I think that's where discipleship and economics hit together. Mm. Because as I said in the message, I think that, you know, finances, wealth, money has a subtle bias against following God, because it promotes independence, it promotes security, it promotes control that sits outside of really our relationship with God. And if we're never thinking about it, it will gradually pull us along with its current, even though it's not a particularly strong current necessarily. And so I think we just need to be thinking. So in our economics, you know, thinking about how we purchase things and thinking about our generosity and those sorts of places. I think that's probably the most significant place for us. You know, I think as Christians, there's an expectation that we give to those in need, to support the work of ministry here and abroad. I think there's lots of rationale for us to be doing that. But again, that feels like a slightly different question than the economic implications, so to speak. So, where else do you guys?
Well, I'm wondering, you know, like, just as I kind of read that question, because I think a lot of that language of economic implications came from the cultural context of the time how for Christians they were really isolating themselves from the empire and how that really just impacted their life in a myriad of ways. But I wonder, like, can we use that terminology in a more metaphorical way? Like, economic implications implies to me like a cost is paid. So like, what are the things that cost us within, you know, the world today as followers of Jesus? What are the things we're going to have to pay for?
Mm.
Maybe not necessarily financially, but metaphorically in our journey with Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, again, to kind of take it slightly differently, I think there are things, you know, if we thought about, you know, if what we believe is true, right? Because we would say, right, that all we've received is from God and we are stewards of what we have received.
Mm.
Well, if that's actually true and he does the accounts and it's all his, have we stewarded it for his purposes? You know, and so I think some of the cost is probably in us saying, you know what, I'm going to abstain from something that I could purchase or an event that I could attend or a thing that I, whatever it might be, in order that I would have more financial ability to support the work of God, wherever it might be.
Mm.
Like that would be a cost.
Yeah.
Now, no one's enforcing that upon us. I think for the first century believers in the book of Revelation, they were kind of being forced to ask questions.
Yeah.
Whereas I think part of our danger is no one's, like, there are no economic costs to following Jesus, in that sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose it's possible to lose work because of your Christian principles, but I think that would be more the exception than the rule.
Yeah.
And I think that the question of, you know, paying a little bit more for ethical goods, I mean, okay, we pay a little bit more, but it's not breaking the bank.
Yeah.
But I think for us, again, at the highest level, one of the fascinating ways in which the temptation of empire is described in Revelation is through the imagery of sexual immorality and drunkenness alongside of it. And you think about, so there's a lot of talk about the intoxication of the prostitute on the beast, all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
And I think that there's something for us to recognize that wealth and power and influence has an intoxicating effect, right? We see it happen again and again and again in our society, right? Where people, for the sake of money, make really bad decisions about their families, about ethics, about other people. And so there isn't and you think about the imagery of intoxication. And what happens when you're intoxicated, right? Well, you lose your ability to make good decisions, right? Like you're led by your emotions more than, right? All those sorts of things.
You normally think you're a better singer than you actually are. Speaking for a friend.
You know, but I think that all of those sorts of things, inhibitions drop, all of that kind of stuff, right? You're more willing to sing. And, you know, even if you do know that you're not a great singer, you're more willing to have a crack at it. And you think about that in terms of, you know, the stories we hear. And I think if we're honest, the things, the ways in which we respond as well. Money has an intoxicating effect. Wealth and influence has an intoxicating effect. And if we're not careful, we can get drunk on it. And then we're making a whole series of really bad decisions. And, you know, I think it's, you know, in, I think it's in chapter 17 when John sees this woman, he's amazed at her. And there's this sense that he doesn't even see the evil or the, like, he just goes, wow, like, it's just amazing. This image of wealth and power and influence and beauty and just, oh, alluring. And he has to kind of be told, whoa, like, you know, be careful here.
Easy,
but there's,
tiger.
Yeah, but there's something intoxicating and alluring about all that stuff. And we need to, I think, recognize that.
Yeah.
Which means that the cost for us comes in being really deliberate to figure out where the cost needs to be.
Yeah.
You know, to actually say, I'm going to make some decisions about not purchasing certain things or not going on that holiday for as many days or whatever it might be, because those things are not inherently bad. Buying a new pair of shoes, a nice new shirt, going on a holiday, having dinner with friends, like none of that's inherently bad. But if we never stop to think, okay, what if I went on a 10-day holiday rather than a 14-day holiday? And, you know, the whole family, that saves $700 or $800. And what if we said that $800 is going to go to May Mission Month?
Yeah, well,
You know, just to kind of say we're going to go and support, you know, the, you know, one of the projects we've been supporting with Baptist World Aid, the Syrian refugees. They don't get a holiday.
Yeah.
So we're going to, and what if you had that conversation with your family and said, listen, we have the opportunity here to go away for 10, 12 or 14 days. What do you think if we cut that short and we gave that money away? So there was a sense that this, and the reason why we're doing that is because we're followers of Jesus and we want to be thankful for the opportunity to go away. We want to have a break together. We want to celebrate the opportunity that we have, but let's just acknowledge, you know, like, so I think, and now is there a right answer to that? Like some people would say, well, you just shouldn't go away at all. Or, you know, why don't you go on a really cheap holiday for 6 days? And it's like, well, let's just calm down.
Yeah.
I think the win in this is when we're thinking it through and we're saying, you know what? We're just gonna make some decisions to have a little bit more available for others, a little bit more available for the kingdom of God. And I think that becomes much harder work. To some degree, it's a lot easier when you lose your job because you're Christian. You're like, okay, there we go. Decision made.
Yeah.
We can't afford all these things. Our problem is that we can afford too much.
Yeah. I think that imagery, like that correlation with drunkenness and intoxication, for me that's kind of opening up this topic a little bit for me, because I'm like, okay, so when you're intoxicated you tend to want more of the thing that makes you intoxicated, and so if we can get intoxicated
by
wealth,
because it makes you feel good,
and again inhibitions are low, and so if you're being intoxicated by wealth, you're going to want more the more you get. And so part of the way in kind of you know, to go back to like drunkenness, part of the way in which we want to follow Jesus is that you need to, it's, you know, obviously for some people it's eradicating it completely. But for some it's about understanding where the boundary is and okay, like I can participate in this. This is not inherently evil for me, but I need to be aware of where my limits are and how this impacts me. And I guess wealth is something, and our finances, our money, our resources is something similar that we need to have that kind of conversation with. And I've heard you say a number of times, like if you can't give with a little, then you'll never give with a lot. Like I think, you know, that's where it's, you start to figure out, okay, like I can spend, I can go on that 10-day holiday, but you know, where's the line that I'm going to draw for myself to keep me accountable to, you know, the God that I'm following?
Yeah, particularly if, you know, you always find yourself saying, oh, I don't have enough to give. I can't be generous to that because, you know, I'm saving for my holiday. Now, again, fuzzy line there. You know, we work hard.
Part of
our pay is a holiday. It's really good to refresh. You could, you know, I think you could argue there's a biblical principle in recreation.
We don't want to shame anyone going on a holiday right now.
No, not at all. Not we love you. But it is that sense of, okay, but if you never have anything to give because you're always spending it on yourself, that's probably at least a place to start asking some questions. And again, I think, you know, spending on yourself to cover the basics is very different than spending. I think that's clear. But it's one of those really, I think it's a really tricky space. And I think it's why it's so critical for us to talk about money.
Yeah.
as uncomfortable as it can be, we need to have somebody that we can talk with and say, hey, do you think I'm excessive? Because we tend to hang out with people who are at similar socioeconomic levels. And so our spending doesn't seem particularly radical or outrageous at all. Because we hang out with people who have the same kind of money, same kind of house, same kind of education as we do.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, years and years ago, we had some friends who they were struggling artists is what they were. And so they were talking about how they'd bought, I don't know, some secondhand piece of furniture and they were really excited about it. And Nicole and I were both a little bit like, it's a little bit awkward because we're like, you're so poor, you know, and just kind of thinking to ourselves, what is it for us then that where we just sort of, it wasn't so much that, you know, their situation, but that we felt that there'd be stuff in our lives and in our home that would have felt excessive to them, just as we looked at people who were wealthier than we were and just kind of going, that's so excessive and over the top, like, what's wrong with them? And just kind of going, what's the economy of scale in that space, you know, and having somebody, even at your own level, to kind of go, you know, like your own kind of economic sphere to kind of go, okay, let's think this through together. Because it's no sense talking with people who are a lot wealthier about how I should be, like, it's just different circumstances in lots of ways. We're probably off topic, but anyway.
No, I think it's an important conversation that is starting here that I think you're absolutely right. It's, I mean, what do they say? The taboo topics are, it's sex, religion, and politics. But I think you could throw money in that as well because we don't talk about it because it makes us feel
personal finances. Yeah. We're happy to talk about money or people who are like filthy, stinking rich according to us.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And how greedy they are or whatever the case might be. But yeah, it's very different to talk about personal finances. Yeah, so Matt, tell me how much have you spent on yourself this past week? You know, like, let's talk politics. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. But I think it's an important conversation for us to have because Scripture has lots to say about it.
Yep.
So we should be saying more about it.
Although, you remember the show Mythbusters?
Yes.
I've often thought that we should have like some sort of Christian Mythbusters because I actually reckon, I've heard a number of people say this in presentations that Jesus has more to say about money than any other topic. Have you ever heard anyone say that?
Yes. Apart from the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
I was about to say, I'm pretty sure he talks about the kingdom way more.
Well, and I've actually, the last time I heard someone say it, I actually asked, the last two times I've actually gone up to them and said, Doug, do you have a reference. Quote? Like, do you have a reference to that? Like, who is it that did the research to figure that one out? Because I'm pretty sure he talks about heaps of stuff more than money. And everyone's kind of gone, oh, no, I haven't. And I'm like, I reckon it's a myth, but I haven't actually taken the time to figure out
how you would. Challenge for the nerds. Let's go, Bible nerds.
Because I think the question is, how do you code what Jesus has to say, right? So, you know, like the parable of the prodigal son is sort of about money because the son takes the money and blows it all, but it's not actually about money.
No.
Like, it's not about money at all, just as the woman who loses a coin. Is that a parable about money? Mm. No, not at all. But there's quite a bit of money in the parables.
The widow's mite is about money.
The widow's mite,
that's definitely about money.
Yeah, but you know, how many more of those places are there? Like, there's the rich fool, but the point is not about this. So I wonder if someone hasn't just kind of gone through and searched money, you know, and gone, oh, look, 15 references. But I've been too lazy to do it. So there's the challenge for our listeners. If you want to do some sort of, if you're into like social coding of like,
if you want to do a spreadsheet people,
work it all out.
I'm trying to apply what I've learned in life groups, how to apply the Bible. Is this a
exemplary action? Sometimes.
Yeah.
Cause then that's the question.
Is that where it gets lost? Cause it's not always.
Well, I think it's primarily, and then we should probably get on to the second
question. Yeah, we're talking about second.
We have gone in a completely different tangent.
I do think that there's a lot of places where Jesus talks about money where the point is actually not about money.
Yeah.
You know, so like the widow's mite, the rich young ruler, those would be two places where you go, yep, money's at the very heart of that.
Yeah.
But then there's stories that Jesus tells where money is simply an actor in it, right? Like the widow, so the woman who loses the coin and sweeps it up. The point is not that she had 10 coins and lost one. The point is that she swept and looked and looked and looked and looked. And when she found it, she celebrated.
Mm.
So it could have been about sheep. It could have been about sons. So the money there, okay, Jesus talks about money, but he's not talking about money.
Mm.
So I, at any rate, I just, I reckon it's a myth. I don't think that Jesus actually talked about money more than anything else. So. But again, I just haven't taken the time to figure it out. So I might be wrong. But if you've got a quotation, let me know
as well.
It's
our new show, Mark Rader's Bible Busters.
Bible Busters. Oh, the problem is I've only got one episode.
It's better than Bible bashing. Though, so.
Yeah, that's right.
Right on. Let's move on to question two before we get sidetracked once again. So, Rader, a big part of, I guess, the discipleship lesson was around this sense of loyalty with Jesus. And, you know, we talked about the three-legged race, spoke my love language. Thank you for that. That was for me. You also talk about the passage in Matthew and this imagery of the yoke. And this really ties into our second question. What does it look like to genuinely share the yoke of Jesus, not simply in word, but more importantly in deed? I guess the heart of this question is, we say it as sentiment. How do we actually experience it? What does that look like? Mm. What can we expect?
Yep. Yeah. I quite like the three-legged race imagery as well. In part because it's a little bit more fun than the yoke. Like, cows never look like they're having fun. I mean, especially when they're yoked to something. But
a three-legged race, there's a winner.
And there's a winner.
Just putting it out there, Rader's a bit competitive.
But I actually think that if there's one thing that's lost in the three-legged race, it's actually that there is work to be done. And I think that the value add in the yoke imagery is not just that there's a partnership between Jesus and us sharing the yoke together, but that there's work to be done. Mm. And I actually think that that perhaps unlocks for us then kind of part of what that question is getting at, which is, so, okay, how do we share the work of Jesus, right? You know, the verse that we have over our door as you leave, right? As the Father sent me, I am sending you. Right, Jesus' words to his disciples and then to us. And so there's a sense that what Jesus was sent to do, we are also sent to do, and yet now we are doing that with him. Mm. And so I reckon one of the questions or one of the answers to that, or one of the places to start, is to be asking ourselves, so how are we engaged in the work of Jesus with Jesus? Mm. Right? So, and that would influence, you know, the way we pray, the way we approach certain aspects or certain issues or certain activities in our day. And I think it helps unlock some of that a little bit to make it a little bit less, you know, because I think, you know, like, discipleship can kind of mean
so many things.
Anything, yeah. You know? And so we kind of go, like, what are you on about? But I think kind of going, okay, we are sharing the work of Jesus, right? He's got work to do, right? And he's invited us to join him. So how do we walk with him in his work? And I think that's where we want to start thinking that stuff through a little bit more. Mm. So, you know, asking ourselves questions about how do I serve the purposes of the kingdom in my work or my uni or my neighborhood? How do I serve the purposes of the kingdom in this conversation?
Yeah.
Those sorts of things I think can be really helpful places to start. Mm. What aspects of the image of the yoke, for instance, were kind of speak into that?
Like, you know, I don't know what your question is. Right. We ask the questions here, Rader.
Gotcha, sorry. I know my place.
Stay in your lane.
I think, well, it's that whole idea about, you know, like, I think that the power of those images is that they invite us to be imaginative, right?
Yeah.
Which is why, I quite like the three-legged race, because it just opened up for me a very different image and set of images. You know, I think the two parts, you know, the laughter was one and the arms around each other to kind of support each other. Mm. Like, I just kind of liked that idea of learning to walk with somebody else in that space. So I think there's value in that. But, you know, the image Jesus uses is that of the yoke.
Yeah.
It's a bit foreign for us, obviously. I think we can picture one, but I have no idea really how they work. I have no idea what happens if one cow starts to get ahead of the other cow. I have no idea.
Mayhem.
Pure mayhem. I don't know what it means, like, you know,
crooked
it doesn't
fields.
Sound
crooked fields.
It doesn't seem really complicated. to be yoked together and just kind of pull something.
Says a guy who's never farmed in his life. Yeah, well, that's just it. Yeah.
So I'm probably missing a whole bunch of the metaphor. You know, it's kind of like one of those, as I'm sure it's a great metaphor, I don't get it. Yeah. So you know, it's like when I use hockey metaphors, nobody understands
No one understands it.
But they're really good. They're really clever.
Didn't the Jews also talk about the yoke of Moses? So like back in those times, you know, when you followed the law, you took on the yoke of Moses. Yeah. So you were yoked to Moses, yoked to the law, and that was the path you walked in, right? Mm. So you had a heavy burden, which was the law. Mm-hmm. And we know that no one could fulfill the law. The only person to fulfill the law was Christ.
Yeah, but I think if I can be a little bit nitpicky,
yeah.
I think that the law as a burden is a very Christian way to think
it
about
is
the law.
Very Christian. Mm.
Yeah. Like the Pharisees didn't sit there and say, "Man, we're under such a burden." No. Jesus said, "You've made this a burden." Yeah. I think it's important that we recognize that they were to walk in the law, right? But for them, that was the way of life. Mm. Right, that was the way to make sure that they were then doing the right sorts of things.
Yeah.
And so the idea of being yoked to the law was to make sure that we are walking alongside
the guidance of the law, the way you should go. How do we do it? Well, you yoke yourself to that, and that's the way you do it. And Jesus is saying, no, actually, you need to put that down, put that aside, and take my yoke on. Yeah. And it's a person, not a not a book, not a set of rules. It's, you know, you have this relationship. So for me, I guess, I think is Jesus is asking us to, you know, do the three-legged race with him, take on his yoke. But what is it that we have put on upon ourselves that we actually need to set aside? Stuff that Jesus has never asked us to carry, stuff that he's never asked us to do. You know, what are we going to offload in order for us to have that really, you know, the tight three-legged race so that we can put our arms around him? Is there stuff that I've, you know, burdens that I myself have placed on myself? And Jesus is saying, I didn't ask you to do that. Mm. You need to let that go. Throw that behind you in the field. Let's walk this way.
Mm. Are you talking burdens of like burdens of the world that we've placed on ourselves?
Yeah, expectations that we have on ourselves, burdens of the world, ways we think we should behave, ways we should act.
Just pick up Jesus says about the Pharisees, that they've made the law
a
burden.
They've made it.
Mm. Right, with their human rules and regulations. Mm. Now, that wasn't their desire, that wasn't their design, but I think that there is certainly an element of that. Yeah,
because it sounds like there's this imagery has multiple applications, because there was also the sense of when you were yoked, like, farming experience,
the
guys,
mature oxen,
living out in Barton Ridge, which is like the farmland of the Shire.
Yeah, now who's speaking out of their ignorance?
You know, it was the idea that an old ox got was with the young, and so there was a learning, it was a teachable thing. It was about sharing burden and participating in the work, and you wouldn't want to put on more than was necessary. Yeah. So I guess this idea of actually living out the imagery of, you know, being yoked to Jesus is to live that out in the day-to-day, is to be learning from him, participating in his work, and like you said, Rox, letting go of the things that don't actually add value to our ongoing walk with Jesus.
Yeah.
I think one of the other pieces in it is that, you know, like it was an image of apprenticeship, disciple.
Mm.
And so there's an element of a kind of asking ourselves, okay, so if I'm Jesus's apprentice and the idea is that I'm going to take on his, you know, like if you think about an apprentice.
His trade.
Yeah. Mm. So at the end of this, Jesus says, okay, you're fully qualified to do my work on your own without supervision. And you can go train others. You know, like if you start asking yourself, okay, so what do I need to learn?
Mm.
What do I need to learn? Where do I need to grow? And I think that some of that stuff might be another place to start in that sense of being yoked together. Like, you know, I think, you know, the longer I'm in ministry and whatnot, there's the mentoring relationships, for instance, that I've found most helpful are the ones where I've identified an area where I need to grow.
Mm.
I'm kind of past the whole generalist stuff. There's specific areas I need to know about this now.
Yeah.
I've got the general. Mm. What are the specifics? And I think we can sometimes assume that we kind of get a handle on the general gist of what it means to follow Jesus and we're good. But you know, there's always skills. You can always kind of upskill.
Yeah.
You know, probably up character or something, you know, like just in terms of the things that we're growing in and kind of going, okay, Lord, would you teach me to walk in the ways of patience or of kindness or of mercy or of self-control or whatever it might be, so that we're always kind of working out how can we be more prepared for what Jesus invites us into. So I think those are places to start. I'm not sure whether that's concrete enough, but apart from actually saying, read this book in this way and do these five things, and I'm not sure that there's a...
That'd be nice.
It would be nice.
Talking about, like, just give us the formula.
I know.
And you're yet to deliver on that one, but that's fine. We'll keep having you back. That's not a problem.
I'm still an apprentice. I don't know the formula.
But I guess that, like, and we talk about this a lot, it's one of our values. Like, it's that on purpose audit of our lives. And that's not something that you just do when you give your life to Jesus. It's something that you choose to do every day. Yeah. You know, where do I need to grow? You know, where do I need to hold on to Jesus? Where am I being invited to participate? Yeah. Yeah. And not just identifying it, but then stepping out in that. Mm. I think we kind of expect it to fall in our laps too often, and it's like, actually no. Like, if I've yoked myself to Jesus, then I need to be moving forward myself. Mm. Otherwise, that's gonna hurt.
That's right.
And you're gonna get crooked crops.
Just a different metaphor. Yeah.
All right, that's enough with the farm analogies. Let's move on to question three.
Is what is Jesus actually promising to those who are victorious at the end of the letter?
Yeah, I've just pulled it up.
Yeah.
So the promise, the last few verses, it's to the one who's victorious and does my will to the end. And I think this is not the confusing part, but I suspect this is where the question comes from. I will give authority over the nations, that one, the person to whom I will give authority. And then there's a quote from Psalm 2. Will rule over them with an iron scepter and will dash them to pieces like pottery, end quote, just as I, Jesus, have received authority from my Father. And then there's a reference to the morning star. The morning star, I remember John Wycliffe, who was an English...
Bible translating John Wycliffe?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. At any rate, he was called the morning star of the Reformation. Because
what a title.
Yeah, because he was one of the precursors to the Reformation that happened in the 16th century. He was earlier than that. And there was a church history exam, and I think the question was, you know, discuss John Wycliffe as the morning star. And whoever it was really into, like, weaponry, because he thought of the morning star as one of those, like, weapons that's got a stick and then a chain and a ball with spikes.
Oh,
on the
end.
Wow.
So he talked about how John Wycliffe was God's morning star.
Oh, happy days. Like,
wow.
I was like, okay, like, broadly speaking, you're correct, but I don't think that's the morning star. I think it's the first star in the morning, right? But I suspect
essay?
Yeah.
I can't remember. I think he passed, mostly because I was afraid he'd come after me with the morning star.
You are teaching church history. Maybe you'll see what other weaponry comes up this semester.
Well, it was that idea of, you know, he answered the question, but just not in the way I anticipated. And I'll admit that when I was reading through this letter again, the question of what was the link between this and Psalm 2 was kind of like, oh man, that's an interesting combination, because Jesus hasn't been talking about authority prior to this. Like, some of the promises are kind of linked with the letters in particularly clear ways for us. But I think in this context, I mean, Jesus is asking them to be more loyal to him, right? To you know, come to him, hold on to what they have in him in particular. And I think there's an element in this promise of basically saying, you know, if you share in me, I will share in you. It's that whole kind of language of, you know, the one who acknowledges me before others, I will acknowledge before my Father. Mm. So there's a sense that they won't just share in his sufferings. They won't just share in the opposition. They will share ultimately in the fullness of the authority that God gives to Jesus. And so this Psalm 2 is one of it's a messianic psalm of sorts, because it speaks about the king. Some scholars, I think, in an Old Testament context, believe that's a bit of a coronation psalm, or may have been used at the coronation of the king, because it doesn't speak about David. It speaks yeah. about the king and how God has installed his king on Zion, another name for Jerusalem, and that essentially, because God has installed his king in Jerusalem, that's a sign to the nations not to mess with that king, because it's actually the Lord that they're messing with.
Yeah.
That's the peace. And so the king becomes a symbol of God's rule on earth.
Mm.
And so Jesus quoting this is basically saying, yeah, as all authority has been given to me, I'm giving, you will share in that same authority. And they become then a symbol of the rule of God and the reign of Jesus on the earth in their behavior, if that makes sense. So I think he's calling them to kind of live into that space, like fully associate with me, be fully loyal to me, and you will share in all that I have been given. There's nothing that you won't share in. There's this partnership language. You know, when we win the three-legged race, mm-hmm. because we're with Jesus, so chances are we will, unless he does that whole last will be first thing.
Oh, heavy.
So we'll either come first or last. But yeah. Either way, I think we're winners.
We get the trophy. Like,
well, we'll get a morning star so we can take out our enemies. So I think that that's what Jesus is promising in this context, right? That whole, you will share in everything that I have been given. So loyalty comes with its benefits, right?
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, for every 10 imprisonments, you get one for free. Like it's, you know, like genuine authority. I think it's interesting that he does pick up the imagery of the, you know, the iron scepter and dashing them to pieces like pottery. Like it's the imagery of judgment.
Yeah.
It's the imagery of those who do not recognize the authority of the Son, right? That's the whole piece in Psalm 2. If you don't recognize the authority, like you're in all sorts of strife, is essentially the message of the Psalm. Like you're going to stand up against the Lord and his anointed? Yeah, all the best with that. And so there's this imagery, I think, that Jesus is picking up, again, which I think fits with the letter, where he's basically called them to say, you've tolerated this teaching that's ultimately calling you to compromise. Don't. Align yourself with me, be loyal to me, I'll impose no other burden. And on top of that, then, there's the authority. So I think that that's the piece. Now, if whoever asked the question actually wanted to know about the morning star, I'm less certain about
I was just about to say, so, like, what is the morning star?
Not weaponry
from
the Middle
Ages.
Kind of
off the top of my head, I think that it's, again, I think it's also messianic imagery. So I believe... either in Jacob's prophecy over his sons at the end of Genesis, or in one of the Balaam oracles, there's a reference to the morning star. I think, if I recall correctly, I may not. And that's the reference. That in both cases, it's referring to a star arising, like a son, a king. So it's still imagery around royal prerogative.
Yeah.
I believe.
I feel like I need to let everyone know, Mark does not get, he does not see these questions before we press record. And so
you have your mouth open. Is that why?
Well, I'm pretty impressed that you're able to just be like, oh, I think it's from an oracle of Baal.
I just
like,
really, if you could just kind of put in the whole, you know, star that led the wise men to, you know, Jerusalem and just see Jesus as a baby in Bethlehem, that'd be great because like, we'll just sync up all the stars for me.
A king is born.
Yeah, a king is born. You know, yeah. You could just throw that in.
Well,
that'd be
that's
great.
Our contribution, that's right?
We're trying hard.
I'm just looking. I can't see it off the top of my head. In Genesis.
Reader can exegete the apocalyptic text and we'll just throw in the heartwarming Christmas story. And then there was baby Jesus and he was super cute.
They followed a star.
Warm and fuzzies.
Well, you might be closer because I can't find it.
It's something for everyone.
Something.
There you go. Well, Reader, thanks so much. You've given us lots to think about and, you know, we've thrown you into the deep end.
Lots to Google as well.
Lots to Google.
Was he right?
That's the problem. Write it in the comments. Do we have a comments section?
I don't know. We should. We should get that.
Yeah. We should.
But thanks so much.
It's good.
Well, Rox, okay. I feel like there were plenty of tangents in that conversation. We could have gone in any which way, but like now that we've kind of spent some time going a little deeper, like what's standing out for you? What's your kind of...
Gosh, yeah, that whole economic implications thing.
Oh, man, that was mine.
No, I got it first. You asked a question. that's a good challenge. You know, like do I give sacrificially. Yeah. Is there pain there? Mm. You know, like and just a few times in the Old Testament, you know, I mean, people have said, I won't give an offering unless it costs me something, you know, you want to give God your first fruits, you want to give God what is right and proper and due to him.
Yeah.
And so I think that's been a challenge for me today is not only in terms of my finance, but in terms of my time and my attention and my patience and inviting people into my world. Mm. You know, how can I be more giving?
Yeah.
More faithful.
Yeah. I think the thing for me that kind of stood out in that conversation was this whole idea of like, we need to be having this conversation. Mm. Like this is actually a spiritual practice. Like this is where we're called to give everything over to Jesus, including, you know, what we've got financially. And I'm just like, I'm aware that I get awkward about it. Mm. I don't like to talk about it. But actually it's a really important part of like us doing discipleship together and us, living out the call that Christ has put on our life together. And so, and I wonder what else we don't talk about. You know, what other awkward topics that we're just like, I'm just going to trust that you do what you do and I'll do what I'll do and we just won't ever talk about it.
So what were the big four that you said was sex, money,
and religion.
And we got the religion bit covered.
Yeah, I mean,
politics, I think, the other one.
We talk about that. politics, I'm not going to touch that one. No. So, you know, like, but even just like things that impact our journey with Jesus. I have no doubt. I've actually had a couple of conversations with some of our young adults this week and we've just been talking about things that actually we'd love to talk about more just to help us kind of grow in our own understanding of how we live out Christ in our world.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just think that there's a real desire for that and a real need for it because we shouldn't just talk about, you know, baby safe. Jesus.
Yeah.
We need to talk about that apocalyptic stuff that gets a little bit weird.
It's almost like it'd be great to have someone older that we could walk with who would show us how to walk with.
Yeah.
You know, not just being yoked to Jesus, but also to have a mentor that can, you know, be in that.
Yeah. Shoot the breeze.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that was an illustration of week two.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the person? Yeah,
who's your person? Checking your blind spots?
It all links together.
Week three,
week two. It was in there. It was said. It was spoken. Well, Rox, thanks so much for joining us this week. Loved having you on.
Oh, it's always a treat. Love it.
It is a treat. Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you're there for one of our services this Sunday, either online or on site, and that you snap the Slido QR code before the sermon to get involved. If you have enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.